Virginia. William Hill, America's number one sportsbook, is now here. And we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill Sportsbook app, and when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RADIORF.
Terms and conditions apply. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500.
Let's make it interesting with William Hill Sportsbook.
This is Julianne Condia, host of Rewritten, here on Public House Media. Thank you so much for listening to the following broadcast on Public House Media. Once you are done with this episode, I hope you'll come check out my show, Rewritten, where we will talk about you having limitless potential and can rewrite your story at any time. No matter your background, your past, or current situation, you can have the type of life you crave. A new show comes out every single Monday. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes so you never miss an episode of Rewritten. Thanks again for checking out the following broadcast on Public House Media.
Strike three, you're out.
Welcome back to Caught Listening, the baseball show that goes beyond the white lines. Christian Eimel here with you, broadcasting as we do every single week as part of the Public House Media Network. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, Google and Apple Podcasts, but also now on Amazon Podcasts as well. And of course, check out publichousemedia.org, where you can subscribe to this show as well as many others across the Public House Media Network, and check out some awesome Public House Media and even some Caught Listening gear as well. As we flip over to December of 2020 and put a bow on this year, we want to take some time and look back at some of the lives. Obviously, this has been a tough year for so many people, and so many lives have been lost, and that's true in the baseball world as well. And there have been a number of the legends of the game that have passed away this year, and we want to take a couple moments and recognize some of those names. And we're going to start our 2020 In Memoriam series with the man known as the Little General, one of the key cogs of the big red machine for the Cincinnati Reds in the 70s, and that is the second baseman, the Hall of Famer, Joe Morgan. And to help us talk about his contributions to the game, both on and off the field and in the city of Cincinnati, is Mark Sheldon, beat writer for MLB.com for the Cincinnati Reds. Mark, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you very much, Christian.
Let's kind of start with, because you know, for so many people, this is a guy who was inducted into the Hall of Fame 30 years ago in Joe Morgan. So I don't want to say very few people, but not as many have memories of watching Joe play. They've seen him in highlights and they've read about him in books. But in the city of Cincinnati, how is Joe Morgan remembered, and what is kind of, you know, the legacy of Joe Morgan?
Well, it's interesting because, like you mentioned, a whole generation of people didn't know him as a player. In fact, probably most people identify with Joe as a ESPN Sunday Night Baseball analyst, and that's how he made his second career, and he was polarizing in that sense. A lot of people loved him, a lot of people didn't love him. But in Cincinnati, he was known as really one of the main guys of the Big Red Machine. And one of the things that's kind of come up over this last year with the pandemic is we've done a lot of look back stories on, you know, the top trades, the top second baseman, the top, single seasons. And even though I saw Joe Morgan play at the end of his career, and I know all his accolades, it's amazing to see how many times Joe Morgan features in the top one or two of those lists. And he just had an indelible career. He was the guy that made the Big Red Machine go to the next level. They were kind of still working to become a big, you know, playoff type franchise. They went to they won the pennant in 1970, and then made what was at the time a very controversial trade to get him. They traded Lee May, who was popular, in a huge swap, I think, of eight players, and then brought in Morgan, and they were finishing. I think they finished first or second place in all eight of his seasons with Cincinnati, and he won two MVPs, two World Series, five Gold Gloves. He's the all-time stolen base leader. And then later, after a time away, he became a community pillar as well.
It's amazing to look at a guy like Joe, and especially you look at dynasties like that or teams and like the Big Red Machine. Like it's funny. We talk about the Yankees and Murderer's Row, and you always go Ruth and Gehrig is how you go. And with Joe and part of that Big Red Machine, I mean, Johnny Bench, Tony Perez, Pete Rose. There are so many guys on that squad where you plug Joe into the lineup, and it's hard to think that someone could have so much more of an impact on a team, but Joe really did, and really did kind of, like you said, kick that Big Red machine up to the next level.
He did. Some of the quotes I was looking at about why they acquired him, and it was really for the speed and, mm-hmm. and that he had some pop, as they said. And I think he hit 150-some home runs for Cincinnati, and he had over 200 for his career. The big issue is the Reds felt like they had the pop, they had the power, they had the pitching, but what they didn't have was speed. And I think when the trade was initially made in 1971 during the winter meetings, they were looking for a guy with speed at the top of the lineup and some pop, is I think how Bob Housen put it in the article I was looking at. And certainly he did more than that. He stole 400 bases. He hit 150 home runs for Cincinnati. He was the guy that kind of set the lineup for the guys behind him, whether it was Perez, Bench, Rose, Griffey, Foster later on. And it was just a really formidable lineup from top to bottom. And he just seemed to put everything together and maybe add some leadership as well, it sounds like. So he was a guy that seemed to fit in really well with that group. They loved him. You can always tell at the reunions and all the times when they were celebrating the past teams that Joe was extremely popular, not just with the teammates, but also with the fans.
Obviously driving in Griffey Sr. for the winning run in Game 7 of that 75 World Series, back-to-back National League MVPs in 75 and 76. A legend, obviously, in Cincinnati Reds, and many people, Bill James himself even, having him as the greatest second baseman of all time. Obviously, I'm sure many Reds fans are going to feel that way, that he is the greatest second baseman to ever play the game. When we look back, and again, you mentioned a lot of this in the pandemic, a lot of lookbacks, but the baseball world in general, where do you think that they will remember Joe Morgan in terms of that rankings of second baseman all time?
Well, it's hard to argue that he, you know, I know Robbie Alomar comes to mind for people. Some people may go even with Jeff Kent, but I just feel like no one's had the kind of, not only just the single seasons that Morgan had, but the kind of longevity he had as a great second baseman. He had this time with Cincinnati that was just unparalleled. One of the things I looked at was the best single season. In 1975, he batted .327. He had a .466 on base percentage, a .974 OPS. He walked 132 times, and he stole 67 bases. And you know, his WAR was like 11. It was 11 wins. So. Mm-hmm. No second baseman has ever done that in a season, right. And he's had several seasons that were approached that. So I really have a hard time, even, you know, you're kind of picking nits in some ways, but I really do have a hard time thinking there is a better second baseman overall lifetime career that matches Joe Morgan.
We're talking with Mark Sheldon, beat writer for MLB.com, covers Cincinnati Reds, about the life and legacy of Joe Morgan. It's funny to me, we get into different sports, and now it's come into baseball over the last couple of years, is how important it is for guys to be, you know, a certain height, a certain size, whatever it was. I can remember the conversations that were had about Cal Ripken changing shortstop because of how tall he was. So it's proof that this is all cyclical, but for Joe at 5'7" to play second base, which is, I mean, now if you look at it, I mean, you know, Joe Panic, Dustin Pedroia, they're not much taller than Joe was at his heyday. But looking back and reading through some of those and doing some research, as I know you have with the Reds of the past and the game, how impressive was it to see the numbers he put up based upon that 5'7" frame?
Well, it's certainly crazy to think about a guy who is 5'7" having that kind of power.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's without dispute, you know, the steroid era wasn't happening mm-hmm. yet. It wasn't like he was artificially juicing or anything like that. And certainly we know based on his post-baseball career how he was a hardliner against PEDs. So he was a guy that kind of played with a chip on his shoulder. He was a young, you know, little guy, and he was on a team with some bigger dudes, and he had a lot of stock. He could do a lot of things in the field. He's kind of the pioneer before Jose Altuve, perhaps, another short guy that yeah. can hit and do some things. So I think it's a little harder to say back then what it was like, because I hear about players over the years that were smaller, or they felt like they were big then, and then you meet them and they're a little smaller. But like Phil Rizzuto comes to mind too. He was a shorter shortstop for the Yankees. But it just shows that you can't put people in boxes and just leave them there. You got to assume that, you know, if you're a major league player and they have the skills, that you shouldn't be challenged by height. It's not like football where Doug Flutie can't see over the line of scrimmage. It's, right. It's a little different.
Well, that was where my mind went, was Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, all these short quarterbacks was where my mind went there. You know, we started off this conversation talking about how a whole generation of baseball fans don't remember Joe as a player. I remember him, and you know, I'm on the younger side, but I remember him as one of my favorite broadcasters. Him and John Miller on ESPN, I thought was a tremendous broadcast team. When he first started doing that, and this is kind of, it's a tremendous second career for a lot of athletes. They either go into coaching on the front office side, or they go into the broadcasting world. Joe, like the word you use was polarizing, but for him to make that transition and to do it, in my opinion, as well as he did, as someone who could do it on a national level without that local bias, was just something that I think maybe added to his legacy and continued on the greatness, so to speak, of Joe Morgan.
No, certainly. And, you know, a lot of the polarizing stuff happened more later on, just because the sabermetric revolution happened, and he was not a big sabermetric guy. I mean, of course, the famous Fire Joe Morgan kind of thing started with Michael Schur and, you know, the Ken Tremenda stuff and all that. But he knew the game, and that's the thing. You know, he could dispute a lot of things. You may not like his presentation. You may not like if he comes across maybe knowing too much. Some guys can do that, but he knew the game. He could talk about the game. He could understand what players were going through, and he could articulate it very well. Probably better than most broadcasters, and that's something to be said. And he did it right after he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think he started with ESPN in '89, which is when he got inducted into Cooperstown. So he also brought immediate gravitas to his words, because being a Hall of Famer and a freshly minted one, part of the best dynasties of the maybe the more recent baseball, it does say something. And he was also on top of that. You know, he was doing this, and he was also very much in the forefront of racial justice and business and other things that made him be able to talk on myriad issues.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Mark Sheldon, who covers the Reds for MLB.com. You had a post about a week ago during the Thanksgiving break about Joe and his contributions to Cincinnati youth baseball in the later part of his life. The post on MLB.com and on Reds.com, you can go check it out, titled Morgan, the Heart and Soul of Reds UYA, the Reds Youth Academy. Talk a little bit about that, what he did, and how he really helped grow the game for the youth of Cincinnati.
Well, doing a little quick backstory, you know, Joe, as much as he was on ESPN and Sunday Night Baseball, he had a cold shoulder for Cincinnati for a number of years during the Mark Schott tenure. Schott was notoriously known for being racist and had been suspended from the game for a while. And she also, on the other side of it, she really didn't care much about Reds history. The Reds had no retired numbers after Johnny Bench in '83. They had number one for Fred Hutchinson and number five for Johnny Bench, and then nothing. So there was a lot of animosity maybe from Joe towards the Reds. And then they retired his number in 1998. And then it was still kind of radio silence for a while. And then when Bob Castellini took over the Reds in ownership in 06, he really made an effort to recruit Reds of the past to come back to the fold and be part of the organization. And through that relationship that was built, Joe, when he did leave ESPN, he came into the Reds as a front office advisor in 2010. But he wasn't just content with talking about baseball. He really wanted to do more. He had already started the ball rolling by putting a bug in the ear of Bud Selig that he had to do more to promote baseball in inner cities and with urban areas, with the minorities, with African Americans especially. They're trying to grow the game internationally, and then Joe kind of let him know that you're missing the boat if you don't work on getting all these talented players that you could have right here in this country. And he has started the youth academy, eventually happening in Compton, California in 2006. And then by 2014, it was time for the Reds, and Joe is totally and personally invested in it, from both the planning and also the programming effort. And he was not just a face on the marquee. He was intimately involved in everything. He demanded excellence from the group and the staff. And then after the thing was built and dedicated and cut the ribbon, he stayed involved, and he was not just a figurehead. He was definitely involved, and whenever they had other events that benefited the community, Joe was usually there.
How much of, you know, what he was doing and what has been done in that area? Again, I mean, it's amazing to look at legacies of people on the field, but off the field, you don't see a lot of these people really get as hands-on. And this is a guy who's not from Cincinnati. Yes, he made his home there professionally, but is not from there. How much, you know, in whatever interactions you may have had with Joe were about being able to leave. We talk about legacy in so many ways and iterations, but leaving a legacy that goes beyond of a stat sheet for him.
Yeah, I mean, Joe grew up in Oakland, California in the 50s and 60s. He played minor league baseball in the segregated South. So he experienced racism and injustice. And he played baseball in the 70s, which was kind of the post turbulent times of the late 60s in the United States. So he was kind of formed by all those different things, and he put that into action. And so, you know, he wasn't a native of here, like, let's say, Pete Rose, but as much as people love Pete Rose, it's all about on the field for him. I don't hear quite as much about Pete, positively at least, off the field. but with Joe, it was, there was more to it. He was, whether he was out in the community, whether he was doing clinics, whether he was just, like I said, participating in the Urban Academy. It's named Joe Morgan Way after him because of all his efforts. There's a statue of him on the corner in front of the ballpark, and probably the most, you know, Johnny Bench has a nice location, Pete Rose has a nice location, but Joe is right there on the corner. He'll be the first statue you see walking in, and I think that says a lot about what he meant to the franchise and what he meant to the city. It just seems like more people come up to me, even in the later years when Joe rejoined the Reds and I had to have some interactions with him, and everyone was always telling me that he was their favorite player. You know, Joe is the guy. I remember seeing Joe Morgan at this place, and he was so kind to me, and he gave me a minute, or he signed this thing for my kid. And, you know, and I just noticed a lot of Joe Morgan appreciation even before he died. It just seems like the last 10 years, he kind of reconnected with the city, with the franchise, and he showed kind of another dimension in his final years.
So let me ask you before I let you go here, because obviously 2020 was a year that was definitely not one we want to repeat ever again. But when things get back to normal in 2021, and when there are, because the way I look at it, one of the ways I look at this is the lives that are lost. So many people want an opportunity to celebrate those lives, and they didn't get a chance to do that at Great America, you know, in Cincinnati this year. When fans are allowed back in the ballpark, and when, if there's a Joe Morgan Day, what kind of emotions are going to be a part of that to remember the life and the legacy of Joe Morgan in that ballpark with those fans and with the 2021 Reds?
Well, I would imagine there's going to be a significant acknowledgement. A couple years ago, Frank Robinson died, and the team remembered him with a patch and other things like that around the ballpark, and there was acknowledgement. But I think it'll be even bigger with Joe Morgan, because he's obviously more recent and been around a little longer, and identifies pretty much solely with the Reds, even though he played with other clubs. So I imagine there'll be definitely a shoulder patch of some sort, and I imagine there'll be some sort of memorial service on the field prior to a game. I just, you know, it's so hard to say right now. I just hope they can get fans in the ballpark, yeah, and we have a, you know, a vaccine and everything else. But I would imagine, knowing the Castellini family who grew close to Morgan, that they're not going to cut corners in paying tribute to Joe Morgan. I think there'll be a lot of stuff. I know they're building a mural on the Urban Academy exterior that they hope to dedicate this spring to remember Joe, because they really said even though he's passed away, his legacy is going to continue inside the Urban Academy for, you know, for decades, and they hope that they can continue to have the kind of programming, and they'll find they don't have somebody to replace him as far as that iconic figure. Dave Parker lives in town, and a few other guys have come around, but I don't know if anybody has the weight of Joe Morgan. So it's going to be hard to replace him, but they're definitely going to remember him here for a long time.
We certainly appreciate the time and giving a little bit more insight into the man of Joe Morgan, not just the stat sheets that so many people are fond of now. Mark Sheldon, beat writer for the Cincinnati Reds for MLB.com. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Enjoy the holiday season. Best of luck with everything going on in this crazy world, and hopefully we can get back to a sense of normalcy next year.
I hear you. Thank you very much, Christian. Happy holidays to you.
That's Mark Sheldon, MLB.com beat writer for the Cincinnati Reds. Follow him on Twitter at @M_Sheldon. Look, again, I'm on the younger side. I grew up with Joe Morgan as a broadcaster. Getting to know what he was like on those Reds teams is incredible, and getting a chance to hear what he was like off the field in his later years to the importance of growing the game at the youth level and with the Urban Youth Academy in Cincinnati is just a tremendous testament to him and to the legacy and the life of a Hall of Famer on and off the field, the little general Joe Morgan, part of a number of folks who unfortunately passed away this year. Was not due to COVID-19, was due to another illness, but really appreciate Mark's time in sharing some memories and sharing some thoughts on Joe Morgan. We'll continue our In Memoriam series coming up the rest of the year. If there are folks that you know of, or if there are baseball figures whose life you think we need to really showcase, let us know. Tweet about it. Search Caught Listening by Public House Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or email the show, caughtlisteningphm@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, review, share us with your friends and family. Until next week, I'm Christian Heimel. You have been caught listening.